to the live retail online integration webinar, Demystifying Internet Tax Sales for Remote Sellers, sponsored by Avalara. Welcome this afternoon, guys. We have a couple of game time substitutions today. I'm Alexis Henderson, Director of E-Learning for Retail Online Integration, filling in suddenly at the last minute for our Editor-in-Chief, Melissa Campanelli, and I'll talk about our other substitute when I get to the speaker page in a couple of minutes. But really quick, before we get going, I just want to give you a couple of tips to make the most out of your webinar experience today. So first, if you have any technical difficulties, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or just let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your question to today's panelists. We'll be addressing the select questions during and at the end of the hour, so you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of those bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget to learn what all of the widgets on this console can do and how you can customize your experience today. So today we're very lucky to have both Steve Krantz and Jesse Bornfriend joining us. Jesse is again substituting at the last minute for originally planned speaker Matt, who's had to be in Washington D.C. today. So I'm sure Jesse will be a very beneficial contribution to the panel. Quick information about Steve and Jesse. Steve is a partner at the law firm of McDermott, Will & Emery, LLP, and is based in the firm's Washington, D.C. office. He engages in all forms of taxpayer advocacy, including audit defense and litigation, legislative monitoring, and the formation and leadership of taxpayer coalitions. Steve is at the forefront of state and local tax issues, including developments arising in the world of cloud computing and digital goods and services. He assists clients in understanding planning opportunities and compliance obligations for all states and all tax types. His approach to taxpayer advocacy brings strategic thinking together with the skills for the courtroom and the statehouse. And a pioneer in the hosted application and cloud computing market, Jesse works with Avalara's key e-commerce partners. In the technology industry for over 20 years, Jesse has worked with companies helping them to drive more value from their technology applications. And Jesse has a degree from Stockton College. So welcome, guys. Thank you so much for being here today. And we're going to start off with Steve. So take it away, Steve.
Great. Thank you very much. And so we're talking about demystifying the Internet sales tax. And the thing about the Internet sales tax is there is no such thing as an Internet sales tax. We've got a set of rules around the country, and there are 46 states, including the District of Columbia, that have sales tax on the books today. What is at stake and what people are interested in is whether those existing laws apply to remote sellers, and by remote sellers, I mean anyone who's in the internet space, catalog, mail order. Do companies that are selling from one jurisdiction into another jurisdiction have to comply with the sales tax laws of the states where their customers live? In the same way that a seller would face consumer protection laws or warranty laws or safety laws where their customers reside, at stake around the country right now is whether retailers have to comply with sales tax laws. The agenda for the first portion of the discussion, we're going to talk about what's at stake in terms of dollars, sales tax revenue on internet sales themselves. We're going to talk a little bit about what is the law today, and then we'll cover current efforts to change the law, Marketplace Fairness Act, which is pending in Congress, and some state legislation that is raising questions about the nexus standard and who has to collect tax, even if Congress does not pass the Marketplace Fairness Act. And then we'll wrap up with what should remote sellers be thinking about and being prepared for, given what Congress is considering and given what some of the states are doing. Now, the sales tax revenue itself, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures, is the uncollected tax. So for retailers that are selling outside of the jurisdiction where they're located and not collecting tax on those sales, the states estimate that they are losing out on over $23 billion in revenue, and that was the 2012 number. Obviously, there's a lot of state budget pressure, and the states are struggling to deal with how to fund police, teachers, other state and local programs. And you've got Main Street retailers in those states who are concerned about the competitive disadvantage they face. They obviously have to collect sales tax on over-the-counter sales, and they are seeing customers come in, try products, and then go online and order them from remote sellers. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure in each state where Main Street retailers are saying to state legislatures, do something about this. We're required to collect sales tax. Fix this so that everyone should be collecting tax and on a level playing field. Those same Main Street retailers are being heard in Congress and are asking Congress to address the unlevel playing field as they see it. So what is the nexus standard today? There is a 1992 U.S. Supreme Court case called Quill versus North Dakota, where the U.S. Supreme Court established the nexus rule that we are all living within as of today. And what Quill said is that, and it was a, Quill was a case of where North Dakota tried to require Quill, the office supply company, to collect sales tax on sales of office supplies into North Dakota. Ultimately, the case worked its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said, no, North Dakota, you cannot require Quill, an out-of-state company, to collect your sales tax. You can only require companies to collect tax if they have a physical presence in the state. Now, what does physical presence mean? There have been lots of cases litigating the question of what is physical presence, what's sufficient physical presence. If you have an employee who goes into a state for one day, is that enough to create physical presence? If you are there for 30 days, is that enough to create physical presence? And the law has continued to evolve since 1992. We've also got a couple of U.S. Supreme Court cases from 1960 and 1987 that say that physical presence can exist even if the company itself doesn't have an employee in the state, but it's using third parties to engage in activities on behalf of the out-of-state retailer. So in Scripto and Tyler Pipe, the out-of-state retailer was using an independent contractor to establish or maintain a market. So in today's modern world, if you look at many of the e-commerce vendors, they may have employees who go into a state for various reasons that create physical presence in their own name. But more often than not, what you see is internet retailers using what are called affiliate programs and affiliate marketers, and they will contract with people. They may not even know where the affiliate marketers are located, but they'll pay them to generate traffic to a website and sales on a website. Does that, in and of itself, create nexus? And there are efforts around the country that we'll talk about in a little bit by the states to say that using an affiliate marketer on its own, it creates a presumption of nexus and can cause a company to have to collect sales tax in any state where those affiliate marketers sit. So that's the landscape today in terms of the nexus standards. Due to the restrictions that those put on states, the states have gone to Congress and said, pass the Marketplace Fairness Act. We need federal legislation to change the nexus standard so that all retailers over a certain dollar amount, all medium or large retailers, and there's a carve-out for small businesses, that all companies of a certain size would have to collect tax. And the states, you've seen over the last couple of years, the development of a plan B, I like to think of it as, the states have said, if Congress doesn't act, we're going to do this ourselves. We're going to tackle this problem ourselves, and the states are passing what we in the tax world call quick-through nexus provisions, which are state laws that are targeted in some instances directly at the affiliate marketing. And then they say, if you, an internet retailer, are using affiliate marketers, you are presumed to have nexus and you're required to collect our tax. And if we find you and you're not collecting our tax, then we're going to impose not only the tax liability, but interest and penalties on you as well. So the states are, I think of it as the nexus war. There's a war going on out there, and the states are trying to require everyone in the internet space to collect sales tax if they're competing with Main Street retailers in a state. And they're doing it, this war is taking place not only on Capitol Hill, but in state houses around the country. So let's talk about Congress and the Marketplace Fairness Act. There have been many efforts to get Congress to address this issue, and I did a research project trying to go back and track all the various bills that have been introduced on the issue, and originally started looking at how many bills Congress had introduced since the Quill case was decided in 1992. And there have been bills introduced almost every year since then. But we found out that Congress had actually been introducing bills to require remote sellers, and at the time it was not the internet sellers, it was catalog and mail order. Bills have been introduced since 1973. So for 40 years, Congress has been looking at and talking about this issue. Well, this year, in 2013, for the first time in the 40-year history, the current version of the bill, the Marketplace Fairness Act, which was introduced in April, passed out of the Senate. It's never happened before, and it passed out with surprising support. 69 senators voted in favor, 27 opposed. The bill is in the, it has been introduced in the House and is referred to the House Committee on the Judiciary, and there are current discussions taking place in the House as to whether the House should move the bill. As an inside the Beltway tax lawyer, what I'm hearing is the House is less interested in moving the bill, more concerned about the impact it will have on businesses, and there's discussion taking place about whether the bill should be changed, whether it should be moved at all, and should it require more simplification or less simplification from the states. So let's talk about what does the Marketplace Fairness Act do today in its introduced and passed version on the Senate side. The bill would permit states that have met certain requirements to require remote sellers to collect tax. And the definition of a remote seller is very broad, and basically it includes anyone that is selling goods or services in interstate commerce. The exception in the bill is for businesses that make less than $1 million in gross annual receipts from remote sales. So if you're trying to figure out whether you're protected under that provision, you'd look at your total sales. You would subtract out any sales for states where you have nexus, where you're currently collecting tax or have physical presence. You take that out of the total gross sales, and you would evaluate whether your remote sales were above $1 million. If they are, then the Marketplace Fairness Act would apply to you, and the states that qualify under the Marketplace Fairness Act could require you to collect tax. Now, what are the requirements on the states? There are really two different tracks for states to qualify under the Marketplace Fairness Act and obtain the authority that Congress would be granting them. One of the tracks is a track that applies to states that are members of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. And there are 24 states right now that are members of that agreement that that have changed their law and brought their law into compliance with the SSUTA. Those states have tried to simplify their sales tax system so that it would be easier for remote sellers to comply and collect tax. And believe me, simplification is like beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder, and there are plenty of people who look at those 24 states and say their system isn't that simple. But when you compare it to the alternative track under Marketplace Fairness, there is an alternative track for states that don't want to become part of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. And the states that are looking at the alternative include most of the big states, Illinois, Florida, Texas, New York, and California. None of those states have ever wanted to simplify their sales tax. They are instead insisting that they have an alternative, and it's largely due to their influence on Capitol Hill that the alternative exists in the Marketplace Fairness Act. The alternative says for states that are not SSUTA members, they can have the authority to require remote sellers to collect. They have to specify the tax that will be covered. They have to specify the products and services that their tax applies to, and they have to do a handful of other simplifications, nothing nearly as thorough as what's in the SSUTA, the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. So now let's look at the next slide, which is a chart that goes through some of the simplification requirements that have been adopted by the SSUTA states and whether those same simplifications will be provided for under the Marketplace Fairness Act in the alternative states. One of the things that exists in both tracks is a requirement imposed on the states that they have state-level administration of the tax. So states like Louisiana and Alabama that have local taxes and local tax administration and local, you're required, if you're doing business in Alabama and Louisiana, you're required to file tax returns with every locality and write checks to every locality. That is not allowed under the Marketplace Fairness Act for both SSUTA states and for the alternative state provision. So in Alabama and Louisiana, they would have to provide state-level administration, one tax return at the state level for remote sellers, one check made out to the state, and audits done at the state level as well. That's a big simplification requirement, and fortunately, it's required of both tracks under the Marketplace Fairness Act. Uniform base is also required. So if the state taxes a certain widget, the locals have to tax that same widget. Remote sellers cannot be expected to keep track of a state imposes tax on candy. The locals don't. The remote sellers are required to collect both the state and the local tax, but it must be applied to the same tax base. One of the differences that you see between the two tracks is that SSUTA states have adopted uniform definitions, and the alternative track does not require that. There are requirements for taxability matrices from both SSUTA and alternative states. So in other words, the states are required to tell remote sellers what is taxable and what is exempt. Liability relief and free sales tax software are also required under both tracks of the bill. The drop shipment provisions, those exist in the SSUTA. They do not exist in the alternative track. That's a pretty technical tax issue, so we won't go down into the weeds on that today. Impact on remote sellers. So I've already said, you know, calculate your gross remote sales, exclude sales in states where you have nexus and or are collecting tax today. Determine whether you make sales, gross remote sales, in excess of $1 million. You also need to look at whether the sale is to an end user. Is it to a consumer, or is it to, are you a wholesaler making sales to a retailer? And you may be required to collect sales tax in non-nexus states in either case. Now, this is particularly concerning for wholesale transactions. And I think what will happen under the Marketplace Fairness Act is that people are going to have to look at not only their own nexus footprint, but they're going to have to understand whether they're selling to a retailer that is above the $1 million threshold who is required to collect tax from its consumers, and if so, you should be able to obtain a properly completed exemption certificate. If not, if you're selling to a retailer, if you're a wholesaler selling to a retailer, and that retailer is below the $1 million threshold and is not collecting tax, you may have a problem obtaining an accurate exemption certificate or an exemption certificate that will be accepted by the states, and then you may be subject to the drop shipment provisions and required to collect tax. And there are a couple of states where that will be the case. So the new Marketplace Fairness Act, and remember I said earlier there have been bills introduced going back to the 1970s, the new Marketplace Fairness Act itself is significantly different than previous versions. The previous versions required very detailed sales tax simplification. This bill doesn't do that, and it relies heavily on software and technology rather than requiring the states to simplify their sales tax. Today's Marketplace Fairness Act, as opposed to the bill a couple of years ago, requires the states to provide data. They have to provide a taxability matrix, what's taxable. The states have to provide a rate database, what are the rates that are applicable, and the states have to provide a process for certifying software as capable of calculating tax correctly. The bill today requires that the states develop and provide that software free of charge to certain remote sellers. And that focus on technology and data that allows tax calculation and remittance is much different than earlier versions of the bill. Importantly, in addition to requiring the states to provide the data and the software, the bill provides what I think of as hold harmless provisions. It says to the states, you have to relieve software companies and retailers from liability for incorrect calculation and remittance of tax under certain instances. So, for example, if the states provide a database of what's taxable and what the tax rate is, and the data in that database is incorrect, and software companies use it to develop their tax engine and retailers use it to calculate tax at the time of transaction, the retailer and the software company are held harmless and are not responsible for errors. That's a much different world than we have right now, and I think a significant gain for the business community, because in today's world, retailers are required to collect tax, and they do so based on the information that they research and obtain or that their software provider researches and obtains. And if you get it wrong today, you're on the hook. You are responsible for correct calculation and remittance of tax. The Marketplace Fairness Act says to states, you can require remote sellers to collect your tax, but you have to give them hold harmless under certain instances if there is a problem with the tax that's collected. So now let's change gears and talk for a couple minutes about state nexus laws and what's happening there. And as I said, Plan B is being deployed by the states who are, as they characterize it, tired of waiting for Congress to do something. With that, many states have gone out on their own and passed click-through nexus laws, and there's a variety of different flavors of state bills that are passing. But they're all at heart an attempt to require out-of-state retailers to collect sales and use tax if there is some activity by the out-of-state retailer to market to consumers in a state. And so many of the bills are focused on the affiliate and associate marketing programs, as I talked about. The bills generally say that there's a rebuttable presumption that nexus exists and the remote seller has to collect if they make more than $10,000 of sales into a state in a given year. The presumption can be rebutted if the retailer proves that there is no nexus. You know, and proving the negative can be a difficult thing. Proving it in litigation can be an expensive thing. And the state's approach to this is really, I think, trying to torture the out-of-state retailer to the point where they voluntarily begin collecting to avoid the risk of liability. Because for many companies, sales tax may or may not be a competitive advantage. And those companies, as they've looked at their nexus exposure and the risk, there are lots of companies who have said they don't want the risk of liability for failure to collect tax. So if they start collecting tax from their customers and they turn it over to the state, they eliminate that exposure. Sales tax at its heart is a pass-through tax. It's a consumption form of taxation, and some companies are deciding it's not worth carrying the liability risk on their own checkbook. They'd rather collect it from their customers. So I am predicting that if there is no federal legislation, we will continue seeing the states moving forward with various versions of click-through nexus laws. On the next slide, we've got a list of a handful of states that have passed versions of click-through laws in the last year or so. Most of them, as I said, tie to $10,000 of sales. There are a couple around the country that go that apply if a company makes that $2,000 of sales or $5,000 of sales. So you can see the states are taking their own approach to solving this, and a state-by-state patchwork. We've got a map here that gives you a sense of what's happening around the country, where there's nexus legislation passed, where the states are saying, we don't even need legislation. We're going to impose this requirement without it. And they're saying, remote sellers, you have an obligation to collect. There are a bunch of states that legislation has been introduced this year and is being considered, at least if the legislature is still in session. And then a handful of states that have not yet passed legislation, but where we know the discussion is taking place. So the state legislatures around the country are very much engaged in this debate. On the next slide, you'll see that in both New York and Illinois, the passage of state click-through nexus laws has led to litigation. Amazon and Overstock, both in litigation in New York. Recently, the New York Court of Appeals upheld the Amazon, what is called there, the Amazon law as facially constitutional. So that case is done. We have a final decision in New York upholding the law and saying that New York was authorized to require remote sellers to collect their sales tax. Illinois, on the other hand, there's a case pending there where the Performance Marketing Association, on behalf of its members, filed suit in federal district court challenging the constitutionality of the Illinois law, which read almost identical to the New York law. And at the circuit court level, the law was held unconstitutional. So right now we have two states with very similar laws. One of them has been upheld as constitutional, and another state has said, no, the effort to impose a collection presumption is unconstitutional. So what is next for remote sellers? And that's really going to come down to whether Congress passes the Marketplace Fairness Act and there is one single rule applicable to the states. If there is a Marketplace Fairness Act in place, it will include a small seller exception protecting small sellers. As I said earlier, that number is currently at $1 million. There have been discussions in D.C. that the number should change to something larger. That will be the House's job to determine whether the number should go up or down. If there is no Marketplace Fairness Act, if Congress doesn't pass legislation, then, as I've said, we would expect to see more state activity and the states seeking to enforce their laws without federal help, without Congress's involvement, on remote sellers. So what are remote sellers to do? And I think the thing to look at is, what is your compliance capability today? What kind of compliance software do you have in place? Are you collecting sales tax in your home state now? If so, how are you doing that? And how would you collect sales tax for other states? With that, I'm going to turn it over to Jesse to talk about Avalara's compliance software, and leave it to you, Jesse.
Well, that's great, Steve. Thank you so much. So my name is Jesse Bornfriend. I'm with Avalara. Matt sends his apologies not being able to attend today. He actually is in Washington, D.C., speaking with Congress today about some of the same challenges that we're talking about here. A little briefly about Avalara, we provide sales tax automation services for companies large and small. We support over 10,000 businesses today, doing over 3 million transactions a day and remitting over $14 billion in sales tax filings for our customers per year. What we hear from many of our customers, as well as companies who are calling us, asking us about what's going on around the Marketplace Fairness Act and some of these activities, is that a key thing we're hearing from them is, this is looking like it's just another one of these silly business landscape challenges that we're going to have to deal with, although this one's one that really has everybody's attention, let there be no mistake. the challenge around that is that, you know, any company that's growing outside of their own state is going to have to be looking at whether they have a nexus challenge or not, regardless. Again, as Steve was talking about, you know, the states who are hard at work on Plan B are going to continue to be on Plan B unless the MFA or something like it comes out. What's even more interesting, however, is as we're talking to some of these customers, some of them actually are looking at this, the Marketplace Fairness Act and the need for them to collect sales tax potentially in many more states than they're currently collecting in, is that some of them are actually looking at this as an opportunity to have a competitive advantage. So what some of our customers are telling us, for instance, is leveraging the technology that we give them today, they're able to start to do things like have sales tax-free days in sales and all kinds of things where they can start to discount sales tax or use sales tax as one of those promotional activities that helps them to sell more and drive more, certainly as in an e-commerce world. One option you have, and one that we hear more and more from customers, is that this is not something you should be ignoring. But in fact, you need to at least be keeping an eye on what's going on and listening to what is being reported out as this bill works its way through Congress. If you're manually processing sales tax today, or if you have limited technology that supports you, and ultimately you qualify for a remote sales revenue threshold if the MFA is passed, that's going to add a whole new level of complexity to what you're doing already. And in fact, many of the companies and organizations we're talking to are barely able to keep up today, and if the MFA goes through, they simply are going to be overwhelmed as states start to demand and compel them to collect. So an option and what many companies are starting to do is they're starting to automate. They're leveraging solutions such as what Avalara offers to go out and be prepared for whether this law passes or, by the way, not. So, you know, with 10,000 companies using us today and that number growing every day, the reason they're doing that is because they're starting to realize there's no real value in continuing to manage and take on the onus of managing sales tax themselves. So by automating it, you're not only preparing yourself for whether or not this law passes, but you're actually able to start to realize real efficiencies around how you manage sales tax today in the states that you do have to collect, whether it's a single state, where there's lots of jurisdictions that you need to collect and report in, or if it's a bunch of states where you simply can't keep up in terms of managing the nexus challenges that you have. And the value there is by automating it, you're taking out all of the risk, you're taking out the challenges associated with accuracy, as well as the challenges associated with the complexity of just managing all of this. So what we're hearing regularly, especially from our e-commerce customers, is that in order to address this and kind of what they're looking for around this, it's really a matter of they're looking for something that's going to be easy to set up. Accuracy is really important because even if the states are not compelled or not able to come after you for all of the discrepancies that may occur in some of the sales tax records that they have, that doesn't mean for a moment that there aren't going to be mistakes and that the companies still aren't going to be held liable for those. In the e-commerce world, sub-second speed is really, really important. Why is that important? Because the longer it takes for sales tax to be calculated and that information to be returned into your shopping cart, the higher the chances are that that shopping cart ultimately will be abandoned. And abandoned shopping carts translate to less revenue. If you're going to automate and if you're going to take this out, you really want to have zero ongoing maintenance. You don't. In fact, what we're hearing more and more is companies don't even want to put servers on premise. They simply want to put it out in the cloud. They want it off-site. They want to be hands-off and just have it work. It needs to have real-time out-of-the-box reporting. If I don't have real-time access, if I don't have data accessibility 24/7, if I don't have the ability to look at my transactions and look at everything that's taking place at the line level down to the detail levels of each and every one of the tax elements that might be applied to that, you're going to be challenged if there comes a time where you need to be audited or if you need to actually be throwing that information somewhere. So a big part of what we also provide and what value our customers get is really around the ability to have all this tax data available, exportable into a spreadsheet or whatever you need it to be, when you need it, as you need it. They're looking for a lot more risk reduction associated with audits. If you've already been audited, you know that the process can be weeks, if not months. The costs can be extreme in terms of accounting, in terms of company resources to focus on things. With a solution like what we provide, you get audited, you press a button, it prints out a report, you hand that to the auditor, and they're off and not bothering you anymore. So by having a system where you can show the auditors and show the state how you're managing sales tax, where they can see the level of detail associated with what you're producing, it really makes the audit process much simpler and it really lessens your risk radically. And then lastly, what we're actually hearing more and more is the same way companies are outsourcing payroll, sales tax compliance is actually becoming more and more strategic to outsource. In fact, in some ways, it's more complex than payroll. Certainly, as more and more states come online, that will be the case. Another thing we hear about is the ability to implement. Implementation needs to be quick. It needs to be simple. It needs to have the ability to integrate with the platform or multiple platforms that you use where you're creating invoices. That might mean an e-commerce site. It could easily be a commerce site and a brick-and-mortar house or a phone system or catalog system. So there's many of our customers use us both for their e-commerce sites as well as many of their other systems. In an omni-channel situation, it's actually a really it's a fantastic approach because it gives you consistent tax data. It gives you the ability to aggregate that data automatically and just roll it up as you need it. The other thing around implementations, it literally can be done in days or weeks when using a solution like what Avalara provides. Why do you want to put this in the cloud? Well, when you manage something like sales tax in the cloud, it really does a great job of eliminating a lot of the complexities and the management of both sales tax and remittance. You have no hardware, you have no maintenance, you have no updates. You have no sales tax research to have to do because we're doing all the sales tax research for you. We're updating on a real-time basis. As we get it, sales tax rates, rules, jurisdictional changes, special tax holidays, special tax jurisdictions, all that's kept up to date and managed by us and in a way where you don't have to deal with it. The other thing around is cloud solution, again, easy to implement, easy to get connected to, and most importantly, it scales as you need it and when you need it to. And with that, last thing I wanted to talk about is automating returns. Although it's a cute little monkey, reality is that the one of the biggest problems a lot of our customers talk to us about is how aggravating, how difficult it can be, especially if you are in a state where you have to be reporting in every jurisdiction and remitting in every jurisdiction. By automating returns, it's as simple as going into a dashboard, seeing the return that's ready to be remitted, pressing a button to approve it, and then it's done. We file it on time, guaranteed. We do the ACH transfer between you and the state or the local jurisdictions. And, if notice is served, we handle it. So the beauty of this kind of approach is, again, it takes the onus out of you to have to worry about managing all this, but it gives you the benefits of having the strongest tax research facilities and strong tax research team to help you. And with that, I am going to turn it back over to Alexis.
Yes. Hi, everybody. This is Melissa Campanelli. Sorry about earlier in the presentation. I was having some technical difficulties, but I'm here and I've been listening intently. So thanks to our great speakers, Steve and Jesse. And we do have some questions that have come in, but I want to encourage folks that we do have another 10 or so minutes. So please please feel free to, I'm sorry, 15 or so minutes. So please feel free to bring in your questions. I'm just going to sort of start by order. And I guess, well, actually, let me start by sort of one of the overview type questions. And I believe this could go either to Jesse or Steve, but can you just please review what triggers Nexus in general?
So I'll jump in there. This is Steve. Nexus can exist. The rule is physical presence, and physical presence can exist because of your activities or activities of third parties that are done on your behalf. The clearest examples are if you have a store, a physical location, that's Nexus. If you have employees who either live in a state or go into a state for some purpose, employees are physical presence. That's Nexus creating. And the final clear example is inventory. If you have inventory sitting in a distribution center or a warehouse or some location in a state, that's physical presence Nexus. The harder examples are when you get into third parties and you may have independent contractors or use an affiliate or associate marketing program. Those are activities that are taking place on your behalf. Do they cause Nexus? If you are buying from a drop shipper, and so you're selling product to a consumer, but you actually don't own it, you're buying it from a third party and having them drop ship it to a customer, a question exists out there whether the location of the drop shipper and the inventory sitting in their warehouse, when you buy it from them, you have inventory for a nanosecond until it's put in the mail or with a common carrier to go to the customer. A question exists whether drop shippers create Nexus for the retailer using them. Now, there are lots of examples like that that cause people Nexus risk, and they may not even realize it until it's too late and they get audited, and then the state is asking for 5 years of back taxes, penalty, and interest. So that's the short answer to what is Nexus. Thank you.
Yeah, and we do have another question. It's pretty similar, but I just want to make sure that this listener understands. So she's basically asking how you separate physical retailers and their websites. So they collect taxes on the former because it's the law, and they don't collect from their website transactions. So is that correct, the way to look at it?
No, so let's say that I'm located in State A, and I have a storefront. I sell at the storefront, but I also have a website that, you know, it's hosted on a server someplace. My storefront sales, I obviously have to collect sales tax. I'm located there, physical presence. It is very difficult if my website is selling to customers that are in State A where I'm located. I should be collecting tax on those sales as well and remitting it to State A. If my web sales are selling into State B and I don't have a store there, I have no employees that go there, I have no Nexus creating activities or risk of Nexus, then under today's rules, I wouldn't have to collect State B's sales tax for the web-based sales. But that doesn't change my obligation with respect to State A.
Okay. I think that's clear. I just want to make sure everyone's sort of, you know, is happy with understanding this complicated topic. Okay, let's see. Another question that we got, which was kind of interesting, sort of around the same topic of Nexus, is one of the listeners is not an affiliate marketer, but she does use Amazon's fulfillment program, which obviously locates inventory through various states. So I guess, Steve, can you address what the law means to businesses like that and how the MFA will apply to that?
Yeah, so the law today, in the, you know, if you've got inventory sitting in a warehouse in State C, or let's just say, you know, you've got inventory sitting in the warehouse in Texas, Texas could very much, if they discovered that inventory, if they discovered that you, say your business is based in Ohio, Texas could say, hey, wait a second, Ohio business, you've got inventory sitting here. We don't care that you don't own the warehouse, somebody else does, but we think you have physical presence nexus right now, and why aren't you collecting our sales tax? And you've had inventory in a warehouse in our state for 5 years, so we're going to go back 5 years and audit you and ask you to pay tax penalty and interest on all your sales over that period. There's a risk there. The states have not been terribly aggressive in taking that position to date, but there have been lots of discussions among the states about going down that road and trying to hold companies responsible if they have inventory in someone else's warehouse. That's the rule today. Marketplace Fairness Act, if it were law, and the Ohio business was selling more than $1 million in remote sales outside of Ohio, they would be required to collect tax for sales into Texas and sales into California and sales into Illinois if Texas, California, and Illinois, or any of the other states, complied with the requirements of marketplace fairness. So it's a two-step thing. One, the seller has to be over $1 million, and then they would have to collect tax for the states that complied with the requirements of Marketplace Fairness Act.
So it's a lot of complicated stuff there, but it does make sense. So thank you very much for that answer. Okay, so let's see. Another one of our listeners, he was referring, Steve, to when you were talking about the $1 million small seller exception. Is that on a per-state basis or a total sales to all states?
It's total sales. So you're an Ohio company. You exclude your sales into Ohio, and you would look at sales into the other 49 states. Now, if you had a store in Ohio and one in Indiana, you would exclude your sales in Ohio, you would exclude your sales in Indiana, and you would look at the other 48 states. So you exclude only the sales that are made into states where you have physical presence nexus today.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, I'm going to pitch one over to Jesse. One of the listeners was just wondering, in general, if the Avalara solutions sort of fit in with their existing e-commerce solution. It sounds to me like this e-commerce solution, automates the shopping experience, and they use the solution for back-end processing. So, is it an open system? Would it be able to integrate with a solution like that?
Sure. So today there are connectors that connect from the Avalara service into a large number of e-commerce, shopping carts, point-of-sale systems, ERP systems, accounting systems, even mobile. Volusion, I think, is one that I believe there is a connector currently under development for that one. Hmm. I don't know off the top of my head what the time frame is on that one. I think that gentleman also mentioned that perhaps he's using QuickBooks in the background or for his accounting piece. Depending on where you are actually creating invoices, where you're creating invoices is the place where you're going to actually tie into the Avalara service. So if you're doing all your invoicing out of QuickBooks, that's where you would tie us in. If you're using Volusion for doing invoicing as well, while we may not today have a existing connector for it, there is a software developer kit, or an SDK, what we call, which actually allows a developer to just go and build his own integration from pretty much anything where there's an API mm-hmm. that they can get access to.
Okay, great. And actually, in terms of the Avalara product itself, I guess this is actually kind of an interesting question. So states are requiring you to file your tax returns online. Are you still able to do that with your software?
Yeah. So where states are actually requiring filing online, we do that.
okay.
If they're using our filing service. If they're not using our filing service, then they would simply be extracting the data out of our system, and then we'd just be putting it into whatever they need to do the filing on their side.
Okay. Cool. Okay, we're starting to get some good questions in. We have about 10 minutes left. Okay, this question I believe is for Steve, and this is about companies that are based outside of the U.S. I don't know if you can get into that at all, or
do they have
to collect sales tax like a company based in the U.S., I guess, is what he's asking.
Yeah, so this is one of the strange wrinkles of our federalist system. Congress has the ability to enact treaties with foreign countries that deal with tax issues, but they have never done so with respect to state and local taxes. So we have an international tax rule that allows the IRS to impose income tax on a foreign company if it has a presence in the United States, a permanent establishment presence is the phrase at the federal level. But there's no similar protection for foreign companies from state and local tax. So whatever the rules are applicable to domestic companies, they would also be applicable to foreign companies, and there's no distinction. So a foreign company could, in theory, right now, and this has nothing to do with the Marketplace Fairness Act, a foreign company making sales to a customer in a state may not have an obligation to pay federal income taxes if they don't have a permanent establishment in the United States, but the states could still impose their income tax and or sales tax collection responsibility on that foreign company. That is an unusual feature of our subnational tax system today, and the Marketplace Fairness Act does nothing to change it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I thought. This is an FYI from one of our listeners, and Steve wanted to know if you heard this as well, that Maryland is auditing businesses that are not subject to sales tax, so they're looking at their out-of-state purchases and demanding that they pay sales tax on those purchases. Have you heard that, and are there other states doing that?
Oh yeah, that's in the business-to-business world. So we start right now that the sales tax problem is it's largely talked about because consumers are buying tax-free on the internet. That's how Main Street retailers see it as the problem. In the business-to-business world, when I, as a business owner, buy something and I don't pay sales tax on the purchase, I owe a use tax. And the states have been very aggressive auditing, and it's not just Maryland. It's across the country. States are very aggressive in auditing businesses who are buying tax-free, because there is no such thing as tax-free. It's just the tax hasn't been collected. And imposing use tax on those businesses, along with penalties and interest. It is something that happens every day. The states see it as an efficient way to go after businesses who are buying from internet sellers or remote sellers. And I would caution people to make sure, look at their procurement process and make sure that either they're buying from vendors who are collecting tax or that their procurement process includes an accounting function that will capture what their liability is for use tax and get that amount paid to the appropriate jurisdiction so you're not racking up penalties and interest and audit exposure.
Okay. Let's see, another question. This is more about a Nexus question, but this one is about specifically if you could explain in more detail about employees living in another state, like how does that create Nexus?
Well, it's physical presence, whether you've got inventory, real property, or people. In the mobile economy that we've got right now, it's easier and easier to have employees from working from remote locations. If they're employees and you're withholding personal income tax withholding from their paycheck and turning that over to the state, you are on the state's radar, and it is not a matter of when, but when that state is going to come looking for sales tax. Most of the companies that we represent have gotten into trouble because they have employees working in remote location. They, you know, and it didn't start off that way. They just hired people and people ended up moving, but they wanted to retain them. And that triggers audit exposure, and the company ends up in a real fight over whether they have an obligation to collect tax or not in the sales tax world. So I would look very seriously at, you know, who you're paying to perform services. If you've got people working remotely, you should be considering that to be an absolute slam dunk sign that you've got nexus in a state.
Okay. Let me pitch one over to Avalara. Jesse, what is the audit responsibility with the software in terms of, like, are these tax CPAs that would handle it if one is audited using the software?
So if you're audited using our software, we do have a compliance team that can work with you to assist you in that. When our compliance team includes former auditors, it's all kinds of tax professionals. So we certainly could support you if you're just if we're doing the actual filing for you. Quite honestly, it's all automated. So all you're literally having to do is go into a dashboard, see that see the remittances that are ready to go, and just push a button to approve them, and then we take care of it from there. So if you're being audited, you know, you'd work with a company like Steve's, or you know, we have some compliance people as well that we could support you with.
Okay, great. Okay, I hope it's okay. I do have still another few more questions regarding just some Nexus sort of specifics. So I'm just going to ask these, and then, you know, I also want to let the listeners know that if there's any I'm sure our speakers would be happy to answer these questions offline if we don't get to all of them. Is that true? We'll get you in contact with the speakers. But anyway, so these two, one revolves around a wholesaler and one around a franchisee. So if we have franchise locations around the U.S., the headquarters are based in New Jersey, is that considered Nexus? So we, as the franchisor, sell items online, but our franchises do not. So where does franchise and Nexus fit in?
So that's a great question.
Yeah.
We represent a number of franchisors who have been under attack by the state, saying the fact that they've got franchisees in a jurisdiction creates Nexus, and the franchisor has a responsibility to collect tax. If that's your business model, I would seriously look at your Nexus exposure. And one thing that, you know, when you realize you have a problem with Nexus, the worst thing you can do is ignore it. The best thing you can do is work through either an accounting firm or a law firm or a service provider of some sort to clear up the exposure. Most states offer what they call a voluntary disclosure program. There are amnesty programs out there. There are ways that you can clean up exposure without having to pay back to when you started doing business. So don't ignore it. Get it cleaned up and do so using one of the offerings that's out there. And particularly, I think the franchisor, franchisee business model is one that's got a lot of risk in it.
Okay. I thought that was an interesting topic. And then what about if you're a wholesaler?
So right now, wholesalers, you know, are not collecting sales tax. They should be getting exemption certificates from their customers. They should be asking their customers for a sale for resale exemption certificate, and they should be capturing that and maintaining it, because ultimately that transaction, every state has an exemption for wholesale. But you have to prove that the sale you were making was a wholesale sale. And to do that, you want to have the exemption certificate from your customer where they're stating to you that they are buying for resale, and then they are responsible for the sales tax. If you're not getting the exemption certificates, that's a real problem, and you face a significant risk that a state will show up and say, you can't prove that this was a wholesale transaction, so we want sales tax on the sales price. And that's not a great position to be in. And states are fairly aggressive about looking at wholesalers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very clear. Well, I think actually we're just about running out of time. Everyone that we didn't get your questions answered, be sure that we will get them answered either by Jesse from Avalara or Steve. Steve Krantz. So keep your eyes open for emails about that. But in the meantime, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to attend our webinar today. And I also want to thank our sponsor, Avalara. And for additional information about our webinar series, please check out the webinar that the website that's on your screen now, retailonlineintegration.com/webinar. And thanks everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.